Little Foxes by Michael Mapurgo, Chapter 12. That first meal together was eaten almost in silence. Billy was so tired he could not even find the words to thank the man for the food and the dry clothes. Anyway, his mind was on other matters. He was desperately trying to dream up a satisfactory story, and that was not easy. He was conscious, too, of being watched. Every time he looked up, the man in the battered straw hat seemed to be shaking his head, a rueful smile on his lips as he studied Billy from across the table. It made Billy feel uncomfortable, almost resentful. It was as if the man knew something he didn't know. The smile broke into a laugh for the first time as Billy wiped his lips with the bread, dipped it in his mug of tea and fed the fox that sat patiently beside him. This was the third plate of bacon and eggs the boy and the fox had wolfed down between them, and they had eaten their way through over half a loaf of bread. In the end, it was Billy who spoke first, because he wanted to forestall the questions that would inevitably come. And anyway, he was ready with his story now. He had thought at one point of telling the man the truth, but he knew that to tell the truth would be the end of everything. He might still be able to bluff it out. "You live here on this boat, mister?" he asked. "Mister," said the man, laughing. "Mister, can't have that. I'm called Joe to my friends. When people are cross with me, they call me Joseph, but I'm Joe to you." He sat back, folded his arms, and considered the boy and his fox in front of him. "And it's a barge, old son, not a boat. I think it's best not to ask questions, don't you? I mean, if I were to ask you now where you've come from and why you're here with that fox, either you wouldn't tell me or you'd make up some story which you'd want me to believe. The trouble with telling someone a story is that it means you don't trust them. So I'm not going to ask you any questions. When you're ready to tell me where you've come from or where you're going to, then I'll listen. I'll be happy to listen. Agreed?" Billy nodded and set about scraping up the last of the egg yolk on his plate with his last crust. Billy thought then of using his story, the story about how he was out camping and this fox had wandered up to his tent one night and then there was a storm and it blew away the tent and that's how they came to be wandering together down by the river. But as he considered it, he knew it sounded feeble and he was glad not to have to use it. "Now, old son, clearly you were on your way to somewhere, otherwise you wouldn't have been out in that storm. Question is, am I going your way? Thing is, old son, I've only enough food on this barge for myself, because there is only one of me. Now, if you're staying, I shall have to go into the village a couple of miles away and get in some food, won't I? Won't take me long. I've got my bike, if you can call it that, soon, and I'm back, and I'll be moving on downriver." "Which way is that?" Billy asked. "Is it away from the city or towards it?" "It's that way," said the man, pointing to the bow of the barge. "And that's away from the city." "Then I'll stay," said Billy quickly. "Good," said the man, standing up, his head almost touching the roof of the galley. "You've come just at the right time. I was going back downriver anyway today. Got a full house, you might say. An old Noah's Ark isn't what she was. She takes her time these days. Can't hurry her, you know." "Noah's Ark," said Billy. "The barge, old son. She's got to have a name, hasn't she?" "I can only stay if my fox stays with me," said Billy, putting his arm around the fox. "We're together, see?" "I can see that," said the man, shaking his head again. "I can see that. Never seen anything like it. Couple of little foxes come in from nowhere. Mind you, I can't have him wandering around below decks, not with the birds. He'll have to stay on deck just to be safe." "Birds," said Billy. "What birds?" "Come on, I'll show you," said Joe. "But take that fox up on deck first of all. You'll see why soon enough." The fox seemed content to wander away to the bows of the boat, where he sat and surveyed the river around him. Billy went below decks with Joe. The barge was divided in two, with cabin, galley and wheelhouse forward and a long hold aft. They climbed down the step ladder into the hold, which was only dimly lit by the light from the portholes. Only when Joe opened the skylight could Billy see that on each side of him were wire cages and that each of them contained a swan, sometimes two. "Noah's Ark," said Billy, looking around him. "That's why you call the ship Noah's Ark." barge," said Joe, putting an arm around his shoulder. "What they all in here for?" said Billy. "Should be outside on the river. That's where they belong, swans."
"Most of them will go back there," Joe said, "but I'm afraid not all of them. I suppose you could call this a hospital barge, Billy," Joe said, tossing some grain through the bars of a cage. "You see, Billy, this people throw all sorts of rubbish into the river, and if it's small enough rubbish, it's going to end up down some poor swan's throat. Lead weights, you know, the kind they use for fishing, they've only got to swallow a few of them and they'll die, and die slowly. Often it's too late to do anything for them, but we have to try, don't we, Billy?
But the worst is people who shoot and miss. Most of these in here are recovering from gunshot wounds. There's something about a swan, Billy. I think it's because they're so beautiful, so perfect. People resent that. Perhaps it's a kind of envy. Can't think of any other reason why you'd want to shoot a swan, can you? And then, of course, there's the young ones that can't look after themselves just yet. Maybe the parent birds died or deserted them. So I take them in, feed them up, and send them on their way again. Feel I've got to do it for them, Billy. Every year there's fewer of them. I know, because I monitor their numbers. Hardly a swan on this river I don't know about. It's my life, Billy. May seem a funny thing to do, but the swans on this river mean everything to me." He spoke with a quiet passion that immediately earned Billy's respect. By the time they left the hold, Billy knew he had found a friend and rejoiced at it. He climbed up onto the deck of the barge and followed Joe to where the fox lay curled up half asleep. "He'll be happy enough up here," said Billy. "Only can I have him sleeping on my bed at night? He won't do any harm, honest."
"Course he can, Billy," said Joe, lighting his pipe. He looked from the boy to the fox and back again, shaking his head in disbelief. A couple of little foxes never had foxes on Noah's Ark before. "Took in a half-drowned badger once and a hedgehog, but never a fox. And now I've got two of them, two right little foxes." Billy and the fox slept all that morning whilst Joe went off on his bone shaker of a bicycle to buy some food. Joe had lent Billy a pair of huge pyjamas that had to be rolled up at the wrists and ankles to accommodate him. They were heavy and tickly and smelt of pipe tobacco, but that did not trouble Billy. Nothing did. Cocooned under a mound of blankets, he fell at once into a deep and dreamless sleep. They were woken some time later by a deep growling vibration that shook the entire barge before the engine coughed, spluttered, and at last settled into a rhythmic chug. It was that slow chug of a heartbeat that propelled the barge downriver at little more than walking pace. A heartbeat that missed a beat every now and again. And whenever it faltered, Joe would coax the barge along as if she were a horse. "Come on, giddy up, there's a good girl now. Downhill all the way now, girl, giddy up now." The days on the barge were long and followed a regular routine. Every morning before daybreak, Joe would shake him awake and beckon him up on deck, leaving the fox still curled up asleep on his bunk. "The dawn is the magical time of day," Joe often told him, "when you feel you can make things happen just by believing they will. Only your age I was when I learned to play the mouth organ and thought that maybe I could sweeten the birds in so that I could see them close to, and it never fails. Sometimes you get a big audience and sometimes just a few. To them, it's such a strange sound that they have to come and listen, and to do that, they have to come close. And that's my reward, to have them only a few feet away and to watch them watching me." And as Billy found out each morning, it never did fail. The birds were reluctant to begin with. The moorhens would always approach first, but within minutes others would come gliding in from all directions through the still water towards the barge and hover around it like bees around honeysuckle. Either the light of day would break the spell, or Joe would finally run out of breath and stop playing. Then, the concert over, they would drift away slowly and disperse as if it had never happened. Billy marvelled at it each time he witnessed it. Then there were the six swans to tend to. Every morning, before they set off downriver, Joe would take Billy into the hold to feed them. Each cage had to be cleaned out and a bed of fresh straw laid down. And as he worked alongside Joe, Billy longed to tell him of the swan he had saved on the canal, but he dared not, for he knew if he once began, he would have to tell him the whole story, and he was not yet ready to risk that. For most of the day, the fox lay curled up in the sunshine in the bows of the barge, and Billy would sit beside him, his legs dangling over the side, waiting for the next lock to come into view, for it was at the locks that Billy really came into his own. Joe would steer the barge close enough to the bank for him to leap out onto the towpath, and then he would race on ahead, try to swing open the lock gates before Noah's Ark arrived, so that Joe could glide her into the lock without having to stop. The locks were Billy's responsibility, and he warmed to the task with each day that passed. Each evening at dusk, when the barge was tied up and they had had their supper, Billy would take the fox for a long run out into the countryside, chasing each other around the thistles in the meadows until Billy flopped to the ground to rest. But the fox would have none of it, tugging at his trousers until Billy had to get to his feet and the game would go on and on. And finally, when both of them could run no longer, they would wrestle together on the ground, the fox only happy to end the game when he was standing over Billy, his tongue hanging down and panting in his triumph. Joe sat on the barge smoking his pipe to keep the midges away and wondered at the two of them. The boy had talked of little else but the fox since the first day they had met, and he would talk about him not at all as if he were a pet, but as a friend, and a best friend at that. And as Joe watched, he feared for the future, for he knew a fox would always be a fox.